Hey, this is This Week in Self-Hosted. I'm your host, Ethan, back after 2 weeks of a holiday break and some sickness. Today, I am joined by a guest co-host, Frederick Burmester, one of the developers of StreamyFin, a mobile client for Jellyfin. Frederick, thanks a bunch for joining me. Do you mind giving everyone an introduction to yourself and StreamyFin for those who might not be aware of the project?
Yeah, of course. Hi, my name is Frederick. I'm a developer from Sweden. I'm one of the developers for StreamyFin and the original creator of it. I think I started in like October creating the app, and since then it's just blown up. And it's been an amazing journey. It's the people are so nice, and the community is just growing. I love open source. So I think we're going to talk more about the app later. Do you want me to talk more about myself, or do you want to continue?
Yeah, I'd love to hear it, but if you're not comfortable, we can move on. Up to you.
No, it's fine. So where to start? I've always loved technology since I was a kid, honestly. And programming was like my dad's thing when I was young. Very not interested in programming at all. But then when I started university here in Sweden, I got into this C++ course. And from that point on, I was locked in on programming. So like my main thing, it's what I do when I wake up and it's what I do when I go to bed. I just love the problem solving part of being a programmer. You can create anything from scratch. You can do whatever you want. So when I started using Jellyfin, I came from Plex, but I've moved over to Jellyfin. I just realized that I didn't have a good iOS client. I wanted to download my movies and I wanted to Chromecast to my TV. And I also didn't want to pay for another app like Infuse or something. Sure. So I just set this goal for myself to create like a proof of concept app for Jellyfin. And since I'd done some apps before in Expo, as it's called, React Native, I chose that as the framework for creating the app. And then I just went for it a weekend. I just created the app, threw in like Chromecast and downloads. And I think people were surprised how easy it is to create an app from scratch that has those features. And I think people got even more surprised at like how could all the other apps not already have this if it can be done in like a week. But then, of course, it's like very difficult to make a streaming app. And I stumbled upon a lot of issues, which I've now gotten a lot of help with. So the app, according to me, had a bit of a downturn after like we changed the video player and stuff. But now we're back and we're like launching new features. We just had the Jelly Seer integration into the app, which is like one of my favorite features so far.
Yeah, that's huge.
I just love, if I don't have a movie in my Jellyfin library, I usually just have to open my computer, go into some program, fix the movie, whatever, for my family members and stuff. I have Lunacy, another nice app on my phone, but to have it in my streaming client is such a big deal for me. And I think people would agree that that's amazing. We are working on like a centralized plugin for Jellyfin right now, which will automatically like fill in all the settings and auto connect to Jelly Seer and stuff when you open the app. So like grandma can use it without having to enter weird IP addresses and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's the short and long story of how it got started.
Yeah, no, that's great. And we're going to chat a little bit more about StreamyFin when we get to the update section, because there's a lot going on with StreamyFin in this past week or two. You said a couple things there. First off, has it only been since October? It feels like StreamyFin has been around for much longer than that. Yeah. And it's pretty mature as a client, so that's impressive.
I think it's October. The time is going so fast. Like it might have been August or something. I know I can see it in like the first commit or like in the star history, but I think it's like late August, maybe. October, I think, was when we got more developers into the Discord and that contributed to the project. But I think maybe late August was the start of the project. Yeah.
Yeah, and I wasn't trying to call you a liar. It's I know it hasn't been around long, but it does feel like it's been around longer than it actually has.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. One quick question before we jump into the newsletter content. One thing that I'm always curious to hear from developers. So obviously StreamingFin is a third-party client for Jellyfin, and there's a lot of discourse in the open source community when it comes to things like clients for platforms that are larger, like Jellyfin. How did you decide, hey, I think I'm going to pursue my own project. I'm going to build something third party to get the things I want from an iOS Jellyfin app versus saying, hey, I'm going to contribute to the actual Jellyfin project and try to make their iOS app better.
Yeah, I got that question as well. People were maybe a bit annoyed that I didn't contribute instead. And I decided to create my own app. I think it's much more difficult for like and slower for like a lone developer to just dive into such a big project as Jellyfin and try to contribute to that. And I just like side projects and just small stuff. So I just created it as a proof of concept maybe. But then I realized that a lot of people wanted me to continue building upon it. And so I just decided to continue. It wasn't like a choice early on to not contribute and to like create my own thing. Just a result of people's engagement, I guess.
Yep. Yeah. And honestly, I don't think there's anything wrong with the direction you've gone. I think that's the beauty of open source is you can do that if you want. I myself have two projects that are adjacent to existing self-hosting projects. And I think sometimes it just feels like it's easier to accomplish the things you want to accomplish when you're building something on your own versus constantly having to rely on other people and the hurdles that come along with the bureaucracy of having large projects with lots of contributors. So,
yeah, it's very slow to contribute to such a big project as Jellyfin. It's very complex. And it's also difficult maybe to get your ideas through. We double checked that Jelly Seer was an okay feature to have in a possibly official client. There's other things that are like not okay, using copyrighted content and stuff like that, or integrating with services that promote such practices. But this way we could do that if we wanted to. Like we could do whatever we want if we want to. We don't know yet like what direction we're gonna go. I hope we can be an official client though. Would be nice.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we'll be waiting anxiously to see how it evolves and how things work out for you guys. But with that being said, I do want to jump into some of the newsletter content. I know we have some interesting things that we've both called out to chat about today. So before we jump into the news section, which is typically where I start, I did want to call out, I maintain a project for anyone who's not aware. It is an icon collection for people who are deploying self-hosted dashboards or people use icons and logos a lot in their documentation. And I hit a somewhat big milestone this week. I passed 1,000 icons in the collection, which is both great for me, but also depressing because it's an indicator as to how much time I probably spend curating and editing and cleaning up icons. So if you're not aware, the link will be in today's newsletter. It's on the website. Has some integrations with a few self-hosted apps. So the support for adding icons to your dashboards or whatever it might be is built in, and it's very, very easy. I have light versions of some of the icons as well. So if you're not aware of that, please check it out. Please support the project. There are opportunities for requests on the GitHub repository, which is what I use as the data store for all the icons. So please check it out. Jumping into the news, two things I think, Frederick, that came up in our conversation beforehand that we wanted to chat about. The first one being the Raspberry Pi 5 16 gigabyte model was dropped this week, which I think is pretty big. 16 gigs is a lot of memory for a Raspberry Pi model. And it's been, at least from my perspective, it's been interesting to see the online discourse around this because on one hand, it's really cool to see a Raspberry Pi model that is so capable and has something as much memory as that has and what that means for what you can do with Raspberry Pi. But at the same time, it was also released at $120 price point, which I think is a little hefty, especially when you compare it to some of the lower memory end models, which are, I think the 8 gig is somewhere around $80, if I recall correctly. And so I think once you hit $120, you're starting to get into the point of, okay, well, there might be more capable hardware I can afford at that price point. So at what point is it not worth pursuing something like a Raspberry Pi over something like an Intel Nook, which might have a little more hardware capabilities at a similar price point? And so I guess people will just have to figure that out themselves. I know we were both kind of joking about this ahead of time. We both have older Raspberry Pi models. I have one from before, I think, the modern naming convention. So I don't think it has a numerical version. It's like Raspberry Pi B or something, and can't even run a potato at this point. So maybe the 16 gig will be helpful for me in future home lab endeavors. Any thoughts on that, Frederick?
It's a lot of memory. I have like a 3B or something. I don't think it even supports 4K. So I think every version after the 3B was amazing. The 4 was like a big leap, I think. I don't know if the 16 gigabytes are because of all the like machine learning models you want to run on the machine or something. Inferencing is going to be super hard either way. Maybe it's worth the money. I don't know. I haven't bought a Raspberry Pi in forever. I'd like to try it out though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like someone is probably going to correct me in the comments of this episode when I say this, but I feel like in my mind, when I think of Raspberry Pis, I don't necessarily think of them as like the main workhorses in my home lab or my infrastructure, but I think they're really cool for things like Home Assistant. If you have someone who's non-technical who wants to run something like Home Assistant, a Raspberry Pi is a really nice alternative to having to fire up or build your own server and something mm-hmm. of that magnitude to keep that running. So I think that's great. And so 16 gigs memory, even better. I also think they're good for things like automation and workflow automation that are running tasks and scripts and jobs off on the side and handling those things because they're more than capable of it. But if you have a lot going on the side, it really helps take some of that load off of your primary infrastructure. Eagerly anticipating someone telling me why I'm wrong about that. The second thing in the news that I wanted to chat about this week was the Linux Server IO team, which is a team, a development team that provides a bunch of great Docker containers for people to easily deploy. They work with projects to streamline the deployment process for Docker containers, and they have a lot of kind of cool things on the side that come along with them. And one of those things are what they call their Docker mods. And essentially they're modifications to the containers that can perform a number of actions on a container. I know some of them are for theming. I think with VS Code, you get some of the additional languages you can install via Docker mods. So it's there in the application when you fire it up. So this week they released two new containers, ModCache and ModManager. And essentially what they are additional containers to help manage people who are deploying their Linux server containers with all of these mods. And I guess there are some complexities with doing so. And complexities might be the wrong word. They're just additional overhead with deploying mods that end up slowing down startup times or deployment times. And so essentially they've released these two new containers to help with that. And so on the back end, they're caching mods, they're downloading updates when they find them in the background so that when people are starting up their containers or deploying them, that they're not being bogged down with the whole download and installation of the mods also happening at the same time. So this is happening in the background. So users don't really have to think about it and they're really not impacted. So I myself run a few Linux server containers. I don't personally have any that are using any of their mods. I've used them in the past and they're great. I think if I were using them, I would absolutely download these. I think they're just cool and novel and innovative. So it was cool to see them come out with this. Frederick, are you deploying any Linux server containers in your infrastructure?
I think they might be my go-to, actually. They have such a large library of containers or of images, I should say. I almost always use them, I think. I've never used the mods, though. I think I stumbled upon them a couple of weeks ago, actually, and never heard of them before that, the mods. I wanted to do some things with the swag container or something. Mm. So this might be what I have to look into now.
Yeah, this is huge. Are you deploying their Jellyfin container, or are you using the official container for that?
No, I think I'm using the Linux server because I want. I think they have like a separate FFmpeg thing to run like skip intro stuff for trick play generation or something. So I needed that to build in the feature in Streamyfin. So. Got it. So I needed to change. I actually changed from the official to Linux servers container.
Yeah, cool. Well, again, if anyone else is deploying these containers, I would recommend you check out Modcache and Mod Manager to help with that. I think Mod Manager, I don't think anyone would run these simultaneously. I think Modcache has one functionality and then Mod Manager kind of extends that a bit and also includes the caching functionality. But I linked to the introduction in the newsletter. Check it out if you're interested. With that being said, want to jump into software updates. And Frederick, I'm going to let you kick it off. I feel like I've talked enough through the news section. So I'm going to let people hear you chat a little bit about some of the software updates that stuck out to you this week.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I went through the updates you listed in your newsletter. And it's amazing. There's a lot of updates. And I picked two that spoke to me. I saw the paperless AI in software updates, and I just had to try it out because I use paperless. It's an amazing project, and I store like all my documents there. And so I had to try this out. So and I did, and it's a great start. I love the summarizing documents using AI, and. And I think this is going to be a great addition to paperless. I think they have a bit to go, but it's looking great. My first pick. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you called this out. It's actually this project I feature in this week's content spotlight as well. Mm. I found it a couple of weeks ago. It really stuck out to me, so I've had it in the queue for a little bit to feature. It's a really novel idea, and I think a great use for AI. I think. People are experiencing some AI fatigue right now. And I think we're seeing people stick AI into things that maybe it doesn't make a whole lot of sense or it doesn't feel like a real use case. But I actually think this is a perfect use case for something like AI where you're feeding paperless all these documents. A lot of people are feeding it more than they can really consume or keep track of. And I guess that's the point of paperless. Mm. And so this is just another companion to help people manage all the documents going into paperless. And I think it supports OpenAI, but also Ollama. So for people who are self-hosting their own AI, it supports that. But also for people who haven't taken that plunge yet, OpenAI capabilities are there. Mm. I guess everyone just has to decide what's the sensitivity of the documents you're feeding through paperless? And are you willing to potentially let AI sift through some of that or public AI sift through some of that and potentially compromise some of the information you might be sticking in there. So I guess that's something people should weigh before they deploy this, but otherwise, it's really cool and it does not take much to spin up. It's really, do you have your API credentials for paperless and then can you provide it for your AI model? And that's all you need to get this thing up and running. So anything else stick out to you, Frederick?
Yeah, I think at the bottom of the list there, you have something called the wedding share. And that stuck out to me because I used to work as a photographer during my university years. And like one of the biggest issues in that company was like, how do we share the photos with our customers? And how do we have them like review them and then send back what they... what photos they want to like print. So a project like this, I know is like, it has a real use case and it's a missing thing in that industry. So I just, this stuck out to me because I think this could be something great. And I haven't actually tried this project yet because I use Image and their like sharing thing, but that's more personal for like family and friends. I think this this would be great for like startups who like photography and want to share their images with people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the update this week was for video uploads. Yeah, so support for video uploads. There's a new consolidated gallery, which I think is cool. Obviously, weddings are often about much more than photos. I'm also intrigued by this project. I've been married for some time now, so I don't have a use case for myself, at least within the context of my own wedding. But I thought about, hey, I actually have some close friends who are getting married later this year. Maybe I'll offer to spin this up. But I also feel there's a lot of pressure to make sure this is working well on the day of the wedding. So, you know, if they're printing out the link on little notes for all the tables saying, hey, upload your photos here, I would be so afraid of it going down in the middle of the wedding and people not being able to upload their photos. That's a nightmare just thinking about it, but also thinking about maybe trying to having to troubleshoot it while I'm also trying to attend the wedding might be a little daunting. But I think it looks fairly easy to spin up, and I can't imagine there's a huge risk for things going wrong as long as you've had time to test and are comfortable to deploying it ahead of time. So I would not want to discourage anyone by saying that, but I can't help but think that thought would be lingering in the back of my mind as I do this.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's got to be stable. I just photographed my brother's wedding, and I was so scared of of losing the photos or not being able to view the photos after I share them or something. So, but I think this project, if they have a stable foundation, it's going to be great. I would use it if I could go back to my working as a photographer days.
Yeah, yeah. And pair this with like a nice URL shortening software to give it a cool URL for people to easily get to it. I'm only bringing that up because a lot of new software popped up this week that had shortening capabilities. So probably a match made in heaven there. A couple things I wanted to call it this week in terms of software updates. I know people in the self-hosting world love their single sign-on capabilities, and there were two releases where projects picked up single sign-on capabilities. One of them only experimental, but there nonetheless. The first one is Actual Budget, which is a personal budgeting app. It is a personal favorite of mine. I'm a finance guy. I'm very organized. And so budgeting is naturally one of the places I gravitate towards when I think of self-hosting things. They're the ones who picked up experimental support, but also ROM-M, which is a ROM manager / gaming platform that's gained a lot of popularity in the self-hosting world. They also picked up single sign-on support via OpenID Connect. So that's there for people to go and tinker with if you've deployed it. And have been itching for either of them to gain that support, feel free to test it out. I'm sure the Actual team would love people to test it out and give them some feedback. So hopefully in an upcoming release, it can be more than just experimental support. Also some big updates in the bookmarking read later space. Talk a lot in the last couple months about this. Omnivore was a popular read later platform that was just acquired by another company. And so that will, I think the project as is will remain open source, but they won't continue developing it. They're going to take it and spin it and just move capabilities into an existing closed source application. And so there's just been this gap or this vacuum for how do we replace something like Omnivore? And a lot of things have kind of stood out and started or have taken command of the space, Hoarder being one of them. Hoarder is a true read later application. I think there's like a weird line between bookmarks and read later. Hoarder is almost more definitely more of a read later application than I would say just pure bookmarks. They had a big update this week, and then also Link Warden, which I would also call more of a bookmarking application than read later, although it does have capabilities that make it that do cater reading later, also had some big updates as well this week. So if you're using either of them, or if you're looking for something to fill that void from Omnivore being acquired, I'd recommend checking them out. And then lastly, Home Assistant had their release, their big monthly update. There's normally at least one update a month that They release a bunch of things. And there are a lot of cool things that come with it this month. The one thing I wanted to call out, though, is they just went through their month of, they call it month of what the heck, where they let people just submit their gripes and minor complaints with Home Assistant and things that kind of grind their gears as they use it. And they addressed something this month that drives me bananas, and I'm so glad they fixed it. When you create automations, which is for people who aren't Home Assistant users, as you manage your smart home, you can say, hey, I want to automate certain things happening at certain times. So like, I want the lights to come on at sunset, stuff like that. If you have a lot of automations, you probably take some time and effort to organize them. And previously, whenever you create an automation, there's like a save or dialogue pop-up that would appear on your window and you could rename it and whatever, but it would not let you do basic categorization and assigning of where that automation goes. So there's always this extra step or two when you create an automation of, okay, I have to save it. Now I have to go find it in the list where it's uncategorized and then assign it to a category. And they cleaned that up this month. And now when you save and you create an automation right out of the gate, you can assign it a category, assign it to an area or whatever that looks like. I know it probably sounds so silly, but it has been such a huge gripe of mine. And I'm so, so glad to see they deployed that. So are you a Home Assistant guy, Frederick?
I was. I know. Starting off strong. I was using it for like lights in my home and smart plugs and stuff. But there was always an issue connecting to the certain type of, I guess, lights and stuff I had or plugs. And it just always broke. I don't know why. So my girlfriend was quite mad at me for like never being able to turn off the lights in the evening. So I just had to go another route. And it's like Home Assistant is so much more than just like lights, and I don't do any home automation and stuff. So it was like too big of a platform maybe for me. I might try it again though.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think there are some other good home automation platforms out there that are self-hosted, not as well known as Home Assistant. But if you're looking for something a little smaller, I guess maybe check some of those things out. Mm-hmm. But that's actually a good segue into the breaking changes section. Normally, I don't spend a whole lot of time here, but there were a lot this week, and I wanted to spend just a couple minutes here. But I'm like you. I fear things breaking in Home Assistant and what that means for my family members who are also relying on things like light switches for basic house functionality. And so one of my strategies for Home Assistant is deploying as many devices that aren't always that don't completely rely on Home Assistant to function. And so a lot of times that means plugging into other protocols, and specifically Zigbee is one of them that I've bought into. And so essentially when I install smart home capabilities in my home, I try and find things that are Zigbee compatible. So they don't rely, Zigbee is kind of its own network, so it doesn't rely on Wi-Fi or the internet to work. But also the switch, when I try and find Zigbee switches or plugs or whatever, they almost always have the functionality there so that they're not relying, they don't have to rely on my server being on to work. And so with the Zigbee switches, I can use Home Assistant to turn them on and off. But if my server crashes or if my internet's down, they also work normally. You can go up and you can flip the switch, or on the plug, there's a button for the lamp that you just go up and you push the button, and that'll turn the lamp on regardless of whether Home Assistant is up and running. And so I bring that up because there's a large platform that kind of consolidates a lot of Zigbee devices called Zigbee to MQTT, which is another kind of communication protocol that a lot of these protocols use to communicate with Home Assistant. A lot of breaking changes this week. They had a major release. Their version 2.0 came out. If you're running that, would heavily recommend checking out the upgrade instructions before you update. There are some changes you need to make to your configuration file before you do that, or your integration with Home Assistant will break and you'll find your devices aren't working. Don't ask me how I know that. There are also a couple other applications that had some breaking changes and some big ones too. Gitee had a big update. There are some breaking changes that they've also outlined. Godoxy, which is a new reverse proxy application that I think has been gaining some popularity. And then Stalwart Mail Server is a very popular email server that people are using to host their own email. A bunch of breaking changes in their recent update, which was fairly large as well. So again, if you're running any of those, please check those out before you upgrade. Don't just use Watchtower to automatically update those and upgrade them as new images appear. So shifting over to new software, Frederick, again, I'm going to let you kick this off because I feel like I've been talking a lot. Anything that stuck out to you this week? And I know we mentioned there's a lot in the newsletter and there's a lot of new software this week. I think there's a correlation with some major parts of the world being in winter and people probably being stuck inside more and not having as much to do with the influx of new software launches and updates we've seen. So I don't know. Do you have any insight on that as a developer yourself for StreamyFin? Do you find yourself churning out more updates and releases when it's cold outside versus other times of the year? Or is that just complete poppycock?
No, 100%. Like, I live in Sweden, so right now it's just snow and ice outside and dark all time of the day. So I just sit out inside and do my programming. And when it's summer, I'm always outside and can't see shit on the computer screen because the sun is glaring. So yeah, I think it's 100% the weather and the season thing for being this much right now.
Got it.
So when I went through your list of the new software here on your newsletter, two things stuck out to me here. And they're both like project management, Kanban projects. I feel that that's been like my big missing project in this space. Like I really want a great Trello alternative because like I used Trello at work, but then when I wanted to self-host some similar thing, there just wasn't a great alternative. So I found these two called Banban, which is like a strictly Kanban board project, quite new. And then the other one is Tillywork, which is also a project Kanban manager. They have more than just Kanban. They have like a table and you can like assign people to specific projects and set deadlines and stuff. So it's, I guess, a bit bigger than Banban is. I think both have their use cases. If you just want a strictly Kanban board, then maybe Banban is better. But I tried out Tillywork quite a bit actually, and it's working great. So I really enjoy it, and I recommend it for people who want to need a project management software that's free and open source.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. When I added Tillywork, when I discovered that earlier this week, I got the impression that it was a little more enterprise focused. But looking at it, I think it's only because it calls itself, it uses this verbiage a lot, this work management solution, which for some reason I just equate that with like people being at work using it. But obviously people are doing work beyond just what their, you know, day job is. And it looks like it'd be very friendly to people who aren't using it in an enterprise setting. So that's really interesting. I'm actually glad to hear you spun it up and gave it a shot. A lot of these things pass through my desk and I just don't have the time or bandwidth to deploy them. So it's cool hearing that you're able to do this. I also think Banban wins my favorite software name of the week award.
Yeah,
it's cute. There's just like something fun and cutesy about Banban. And I don't know why, I can't explain what it is, but I love the name behind that. I think that's really interesting. Have you ever used Vicuña at all? Are you familiar with that?
No, never.
Application? That's a very popular, I think, project management slash task manager. I know it has Kanban board functionality. And I feel like that's dominated the space for quite some time. And so it's encouraging to see these other projects pop up, especially other very capable looking projects like this. Both Banban and Tillywork look great. So if anyone else is looking out, anyone else out there is looking for this functionality, I guess check these two out for sure. Thanks for sharing those with us, Frederick. I'm not a Kanban guy, or I manage my project and tasks in another way. So I think that's the beauty of having other people on the show, getting those perspectives, because I don't know that I would have called those out myself in this week's newsletter. So super interesting. A couple things stood out to me this week. And I'll talk about three pieces of software very quickly, just kind of all grouped together. Feels like there were a lot of interfaces for existing tools that came out this week. And whether it's because people find it easier to manage or because they're catering towards people who are newer, both great use cases, support that, both of them 100%. First one is CaddyGen. I'm a little biased because I am a Caddy user myself for my reverse proxy. And it is a Caddy configuration generator. At first, I scratched my head a little bit because I think the beauty of Caddy is that Caddy files, which are essentially configuration files that are what Caddy runs on. So when you want to add a new subdomain or domain to your proxy and your web servers, you go into this file and you just tell it, hey, here's the domain and here's where it should redirect, or here's the application I'm proxying. The nature of Caddy is that it's very simple. The Caddy file in theory should be simple. Now you can do some complex things with it that get a little goofy, but I think the beauty and appeal of Caddy is that it's so easy to manage the Caddy file. So when this popped up, I was like, oh, I don't know that I need an interface for configuring it because it is so easy. But I think a lot of people, especially newer self-hosters, can be a little put off by configuration files, especially if you have a lot of services and you have a lot of subdomains. I think that can be daunting to people. So the more I think about it, the more time I spend with it, I do really support what's happening and what they're doing here. I think I do some goofy things with my Caddy file myself that I'd be interested to see if this supports, but it looks like it has a ton of great features right off the bat. So that was the first one. The second one, an application called ComposeCraft, and it's an interface for managing Docker Compose. So again, something that's typically done in a configuration file. Someone has built an interface for interfacing it with it and managing it for people who'd rather see things visually than in a configuration file. I looked at the screenshots. It's something I want to spin up because I'd love to test it out. I struggle a little bit to think how an interface can make Docker Compose more simple or more easier to use. Just because I also think Docker Compose is very straightforward once you get the hang of it. So will be interesting to give that a spin. And then the other one I wanted to talk about, where is it? There was a dashboard. It might be in my latest directory apps here. Oh, I feel like an idiot because I can't find it now. There's a new dashboard for Nginx Proxy Manager, which I think is big for a lot of people. Nginx Proxy Manager already has a web interface, but when you think about like the traffic being routed through it and all the logs, there's not a great way to get to that. And so someone built a dashboard for it, and here it is, Dashly, a lightweight dashboard for Nginx Proxy Manager. Already, Nginx Proxy Manager, a very popular application because it's a web interface, and this kind of takes it one step further to helping you organize things like that. So check that out for sure. What are you using, Frederick, to proxy your services or as a web server?
I'm using Nginx and Nginx Proxy Manager specifically in combination with Swag on some of my servers. It depends. Like if I have a headless server, then Swag is like the go-to because it doesn't need a web interface. Nginx Proxy Manager is so easy. I was at first confused when I saw Dashly, because I didn't think they needed a dashboard. But then I looked at it and I realized the same thing as you, that there's no great way of seeing maybe what services are up or statistics or logs or stuff like that. So that might be great, and I'll have to try that out.
Yeah, so anyone else, I guess, who might be looking for that functionality as well. Again, Frederick, I kind of went where you did as well, like scratching my head, why do you need a dashboard for this when it's already an interface? But I think there are legitimate use cases for it. The last new project I wanted to call out is this project called Feridun. And it's a very just novel project where it is a place to publish chat quotes. And specifically, the project pitches itself as chat quotes. But I actually immediately thought, hey, this is a great place for me to start capturing all the crazy things my four-year-old daughter says and the funny things that we want to be able to remember. And it's just a really nice interface for doing something like that. this specifically, the use case for the examples in the repository is for just saving kind of like legendary chats and memorable chats from bash.org, which is no longer online. But again, I think it caters itself to a lot more use cases than that. I thought this was really novel, something that doesn't exist before, but also the developer is James Reed. And if you're listening to this, and you don't know who James Reed is, he's probably most well known for, he develops an application called Olivetin, which essentially lets you take command line or terminal commands and publish them to a web interface. So you can just press a button on a web interface to execute commands on your server. So if you want, if you need to occasionally restart a Docker container on the go, you can create a button for that and press it. And then all, when you're out and about and you need to restart something, you can just press that button and it'll restart rather than figuring out how you're going to SSH into your server on your phone to get in and restart it. But I think James is great. I've chatted with him quite a bit outside of the newsletter because his stuff pops up. I feel like, are you familiar with that meme? I think it's usually the Scooby-Doo meme where it's like the end of the episode, they pull the mask off the person and they're like, oh, yeah, it's really you. James Reed has so many projects or a lot of cool novel projects. If you come to his repository and check them out, or his GitHub profile and check out his repositories, you can see he has a lot himself that he's contributed, but he's also built a lot himself. And he has a lot of cool, just kind of novel things like Faradoon, this chat app that we're talking about this week, where I feel like I occasionally see these projects pop up. And I'd be like, oh, that's really cool. I wonder how someone thought of that. And then, you know, pulling the mask off, I'll go and be like, oh, it's a James Reed project, of course. And this was one of those. You see this pop up and it's like, wow, this is really cool. And usually the giveaway is, I really appreciate this about the projects he releases, is in his repositories, he always has a disclaimer. He calls his projects no-nonsense open source projects. So very straightforward, you know, it's open source. You know, you don't feel like, I won't accept contributions for development. I'm providing this as open source. There's no special versions that I'll host for people, no data collection, no telemetry, anything like that. And usually like that's the giveaway before I even see that he's a developer, that based on the profile of the repository, that's normally how I can tell, oh, this is probably a James Reed project that's coming through. So check out Faradoon. Also check out some of his other projects, especially Olivetin if you're not familiar with it. So with that being said, I think that's all we're going to go through today. There's a lot of other great content in the newsletter. I discovered a ton of great new projects that have been added to my self-hosted application directory, which is akin to Awesome Self-Hosted, just a directory for people to browse and discover new software. Also, some great community content coming through this week. A lot of great guides, actually. Some weeks, it feels like lately, I haven't had a ton of great community content to feature in the newsletter. This week, there was no shortage of it. A lot of great guides, an awesome guide on installing Headscale if you want to use Tailscale, but don't want to rely on third-party services to execute that. A great Linux beginner guide for people. And then, of course, Content Spotlight. Talk a little bit more about paperless AI, which, Frederick, you brought up during this discussion in the software updates. So, with that being said, before we sign off, Frederick, if people want to connect with either you and or the StreamyFin team, where can they do that? Are there places online they can go to find you? And then second, how can people support you and the StreamyFin project? Are there outlets where they can do so? And what's the best way for people to do that, whether it's contributions or monetary donations?
The best way to get in contact with me or us are via the StreamyFin GitHub and or via my personal GitHub. And from there, please join our Discord, because in there we talk a lot about Jellyfin, StreamyFin, off-topic stuff. We have great discussions and a great community. I'm so glad that people are joining. And we saw an uptick, I think, last week. A lot of people joined, and it's been really amazing seeing the community come together. And I really enjoy talking with people. I think that's the main thing that drives me to create these things. So please join our Discord. It's an amazing place. And if you want to contribute, then do so by submitting code. It's I think that's the best way to contribute to this project. It also helps the load, take the load off on from our developers and from me. It's always difficult to support open source projects because you normally need a day job on the side, or this is the side. And it's very hard to find time to always contribute. So if you are a React Native developer and or have some React experience, then please, it would be amazing. If you want to support the project by donating money, then we have a Patreon you can join to get into the beta for the app. I know that might sound strange to some people that you have to pay to access, which is not in line with free open source, but everything is free. The app is free. The code is open source. The app on the Play Store and App Store is free. It's just the time it takes for us to create and submit test builds takes a lot of time. And it's a great way to for like both the community and us developers to get some value out of that specific thing. But everything's going to stay free for StreamFin. But if you want, you can donate. Or to me personally from the Buy Me a Coffee page.
Perfect. And by the way, I don't think that's unreasonable. I know you said it's an open source project, but especially because StreamFin is primarily mobile clients, there are costs associated, for those who don't know, with publishing applications to the various application stores, whether it's the App Store on iPhones or the Google Play Store for Android phones. So I'm sure some of those contributions also go towards offsetting some of those costs as well.
Yes, 100%.
That sounds great. Yeah. For people who can't code, Frederick, are there opportunities for them to contribute maybe with documentation, or are you looking for help translating the application to other languages?
Yeah, that's great that you mentioned that, because we have an open a pull request on GitHub right now for translations. And if you are speaking any other language than English or Swedish, then we'd love your translation contributions. And if you want also, you could submit issues or feature requests or just any text-related changes are very welcome, or screenshots or graphical stuff. We'd love to have like a promotion video. All that stuff is also greatly appreciated. Yeah.
Perfect. That's great to hear. And that's normally the case, I feel like, with open source projects. I feel like people might be intimidated because they don't know how to code, but there are always opportunities to contribute in ways other than, you know, programming aspects of the application. So, Frederick, I'm going to include a bunch of these links in the show notes and the description for those who are listening to this via podcast today. If you want to get involved with StreamFin, please do so. Would highly encourage it. It's a great application. I've had a lot of great interactions with you and Chris, Frederick. So it's cool to see the application grow and to watch it mature and hopefully become a first-party client. So best of luck with that. And maybe we can have you back for the next big update in a couple weeks or months, however long that takes.
Thank you. That would be great. It's been really fun chatting with you, Ethan. And I love your newsletter. I think it's great that you're doing these podcasts with people on every week or something. It's super fun.
Cool. Well, thanks for the kind words. And thanks again, everyone, for listening. I will link to the newsletter below as well if you need a link to that. Otherwise, have a great weekend and happy self-hosting.